Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Timon and Pumbaa from the OG cartoon version of The Lion King. I don't care what y'all say, they adopted Simba, they raised him as really good fathers, and they raised a well-established human being, proving that like queer parents can adopt, and we should adopt, and we'll raise fucking kings of the jungle, I guess, whatever.
Yeah, low-key, it was like a bear and a twink. Like, I feel like they really played with that imagery there. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of that. That's cute, though. I really... Representation matters.
What up, Cabrona?
What's poppin', Chingona? What's goody? I'm kind of drunk.
Oh, look at you.
It's hot, bro. How you doing? How you been? It's been a week.
Yeah, I'm good. I have been pretty lazy lately. Just, you know, out here trying to hustle hard.
And that's not lazy, bro.
Yeah, but it's also like, you know, me and my computer and then going to interviews every now and then, so...
That is the opposite of lazy, regardless of what you say. That's like, just like, you know, low key work, but it's still work.
Yeah. But that's...
You've been reading books though, haven't you?
Yes, I fucking got my library card and it's been...
Hey!
I've been getting my life because I didn't believe Library Bay when she said this and I should have believed her. But LA County in particular has like the most bomb collection. Like, even, like, small, like, indie queer YA books that I want to, like, read, like, are on there. Sometimes you have to put it, like, on a wait list, but there are some, like, hard-to-find stuff on there. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, most of Roxane Gay's stuff is on there. So I'm on hold for most of that, and I'm reading that right now.
Okay, all right. What were you reading recently by her?
Difficult Women.
Has that, like, have you felt like that's been, like, something you can apply to your life? Like, is it something you're, like, seeped into your bones?
I mean, it's just, like, a collection of a bunch of short stories, and there's a lot of sex. There's just, I definitely enjoy every single story, and I think they're very interesting, and I like the title because it's, like, so subtle. It's subtle within these stories because they're told in a way where you're, like, of course she's like this, like, of course, you know, this is how she goes about things, and you understand the characters, but you know, from the outside, these women that their stories are being told can be perceived as difficult women, but like, no, like, they're just women. Then you
period
that you don't point. Yeah, and you don't want to, like,
punto, that's it.
Yeah, so I don't know, it's been good. I'm looking forward to reading, like, Hunger. That's the main one that I want to read.
Yeah, like, shout out to you and Library Bay. Like, I've been, like, trying to get back into my book reading thing. And I think the last book I read was, like, I'm such a bad queer. It was Giovanni's Room by Baldwin. And I just need to get back into reading If Bill Street Could Talk. I started it. I didn't finish it. And I've been lazy, and I haven't been reading. And I need to start getting off of Twitter and off of Instagram and being, like, present in, like, the real world. Whatever that means, right? Like, getting off the internet and hopefully just centering myself, dude. It's been wild out here. We got to be reading books because, I mean, apparently we're going to go meet aliens at Area 51 before we're going to release little babies out of concentration camps. But it's whatever. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what they're prioritizing, let's just hope the aliens have some common sense and that they help out in the struggle to get our people out of concentration camps. Squad, Alien Gang, you know, like, I've been repping that for a while too, so I'm kind of
Alien Gang.
I trust that if there are real, like, you know, extraterrestrial forces out there that have real intelligence, unlike apparently humankind, that will go out there and fix this shit, so maybe.
I don't know, I think they'll just, like, annihilate everyone and be like, we're done with you, like,
would
y'all crazy.
Would not blame them.
I'm like, once they get a glimpse, they're like, oh, y'all crazy.
Bye. They already got a glimpse. I mean, apparently they're being held captive, according to the people who are going.
I don't think they're being held captive. I think they're, like, just chilling, like, waiting till, like, we kill ourselves off. Like, they're just, like, aliens.
Nah.
They're just, I don't know, dude. They gotta be, I don't know. Buy that. They're probably smarter than us. I don't know.
It's a government facility, though. It's not, like, it's just, like, the aliens on their own. Like, it's the government. But anyways, moving on. God, actually, moving back into it, I read this, like, weird book once. It was like a sci-fi YA type of book where I think it had to do with like Area 51, where somebody accidentally ended up there and like the aliens were all gay, so and they were all polyamorous, so it was interesting. Oh, I can't remember the name of the book for the life of me, but I remember that
the aliens are evolved. That's pretty fucking cool, dude. Like, I don't know, I believe in aliens, just not that they're at Area 51.
Not necessarily. I don't know. Sometimes I get in the mood to want to, like, see those kind of documentaries and just, like, hear the outlandish, wild-ass theories and stuff. Because you never know. I mean,
hey, you don't. Like, 45 is president right now. Ew. So, yes, I believe in aliens at this point. And
I don't know.
Like, anything's fucking possible right now, dude. And I'm just like, eh, whatever. I'm just going to try to stay off the internet because that shit's just weirding me out, dude. I don't know, like, constant overexposure to like the shit that's happening in the world has just made like everyone super anxious, and I'm just like, I really just want to like fucking chill. I don't want to like have a fucking panic attack every time like I see what's happening like in the world, and I'm just like, I can't do this.
God,
anxiety. It's so real, dude.
For sure.
I'm gonna get off that shit.
Oh my I'm God, not making dude. Any promises. I'm not getting off of Twitter.
Look, I need to. Like, it's a problem. I'd be on there for nothing. I'd be at work on a call talking to a client. And I'm like, yes, I'm tweeting. Like,
God.
Like, I'm talking to you, and I'm like, yes, yeah, okay, that document. That's right. Well, send it to this property manager. I can't, dude. It's so bad. God. Anyways, so, completely off topic.
Yeah, like, I guess moving completely away from those topics, something that I was fucking stoked on, and we've talked about how reboots need to get the fuck on somewhere, The Lion King included. Like, that's enough. But
I'm done.
But, you know, for years now, people have been like, oh, Idris Elba needs to be 007 right now. And, you know, power to you, man, whatever, but Lashana Lynch... Now that got me fucking excited. She was on Captain Marvel. That's right, I said Marvel. And
oh my God, Marvel, girl. That's how I know you from the South.
No, it's Marvel because of in the movie. That's how they. You know, never mind. Lashana Lynch was also on there. Her name was Maria, right? Wilden.
Maria. It's Captain Marvel's wife.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Canon. So
also badass.
I'm stoked on it. Like, and they're doing like not exactly a reboot, it's more like a continuation where she kind of takes over the role. The one thing that is plaguing me, that is worrying me, that is filling my soul with anguish is that I get the strongest feeling that they're gonna make her straight, and that's gonna fucking tear me apart.
Ew.
It'll tear me apart. It'll make me jump off a building. And that's nothing that they've said or confirmed or even commented on. It's just me and my gut feeling, thinking about how things are too good to be true. I think it's also called anxiety.
Dude, she's going to be straight. Like, just think about it. Like, it's a bunch of straight white dudes in a fucking, like, meeting. They're going, yeah, let's make sure she's black, but that's it.
It's like, you make her a woman, you make her black, and it's like, why not just take that one more step? Just take one more step.
They're not going to take it, dude. You know, they're just already like, more. They think they're really doing it by like introducing her as the next 007. But look,
I think
it could like,
be. I think there's a chance. And I say this because, you know, like a big part of 007 is that he gets all these girls. Like, that's a thing, right? So it's like, maybe just, you know, like stick to that part of the formula. So I don't know.
Isn't Phoebe Waller-Bridge writing the screenplay?
Fuck off.
Yeah, I think she is, dude. Like, look, let's do our Googles.
Yeah, let's do our Googles. Right, because if Phoebe Waller-Bridge is doing it, then I might be wrong. Because she has made her own characters in the past, like, low-key
queer. Yeah, Bond. It's, like, the second thing. it found Phoebe Waller-Bridge. James Bond is absolutely relevant now. Bond 25 script. Yeah, I think they gave her the script. I heard about it maybe a month ago.
That's but fucking I wasn't sure. Wild.
Yeah, like, she's been brought in to polish the script for the next James Bond film.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay, I mean, I trust her. I like her. I hope that she's not the original writer, but maybe she can make that change.
Oh, dude, I really believe in it. They have Cary Fukunaga as the director. Like, I don't know what the fuck they're going to be doing with this movie now. That I'm, like, super excited.
That's fucking wild. I did not know about Phoebe.
Cary Fukunaga, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and
Lashana Lynch.
Lashana Lynch. Like, that's going to be fucking amazing. I mean, hopefully it is. I'm really hoping that doesn't fucking fail. Because, you know, dudes, they, like, hate... Like, not just dudes. Everyone hates women.
Mostly so, dudes, but yeah.
I mean, you'd be surprised by the white women anyways.
Yeah, but... this to me came as really great news as a person who likes seeing women do stuff in action, especially like Power Rangers, who people think sucked, but it was one of the best fucking movies.
It was bomb.
And Trimberly Forever, and they just decided not to continue on. And like Becky G was like queer, but you know, they want to fucking break my heart. So Lashana Lynch is helping heal me just a little bit.
Yeah, for y'all that don't know, Power Rangers did not get rebooted. I mean, they're not going to continue with the sequel. They're talking about just completely rebooting it with different actors.
Stupid.
Because the lead white boy just is Billy off Stranger Things.
That's not even
and
a big
Becky G.
I'm sorry, but I've seen the latest Stranger Things.
I like
Billy had the availability. Like, he could have done it. He could have done the next season.
Maybe he got like booked for something else we don't know about. But anyways, Becky G is like a fucking pop star. Like, she was when this shit came out. Like,
yeah,
when Power
was.
Rangers came out, Becky G was already like a pop star, and it was like the most confusing but awesome like change of career. She was like, I'm gonna be like an acting and music, and I'm gonna see which one works. And now she's like huge because she made a weird sleepover song, which was queer baity. But whatever, Becky G, go off. Just
she
make money.
She's had some really good bops. Like, I think that she has grown, but I wouldn't say like so much that it would put her out of that league. I don't know. I just think that I just think that they're stupid. Honestly, such a good fucking movie.
I'm whatever Becky G wants to do, but she's like an oversexualized 18-year-old. But shout out to her.
She's like
you know?
Our age.
No,
yes,
she looks
is.
Like she's 18. Are you serious?
She's like our well, I should say my age.
Your age.
Yeah. Let me see how
she
old
looks
she is.
A lot younger, dude.
Oh,
like,
shit. She's a little young. She's like 22 or something like that.
See?
Like, 22, though.
Almost
not 18.
30, bro. Like, that's a baby to me. She a child. She brand new to Earth. Like, I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna be I'm close to 30. So I'm like, nah.
I think she just turned 22.
God dang. She's a child. She's a literal just newborn. I can't. I'm just like, I see her videos and I'm like, why? Why, baby girl? Just no. I don't need this.
Okay, well, thank let's. God, at least, we should probably move into our topics.
Oh my God. We've been wanting to talk about this for a while, but we've just been wanting to do it justice. So it's taking us a while like to finally like touch this. So what are we talking about today, Maita?
We're talking about a movie called Tangerine and
Pose. Finally, we're finally talking about Pose.
Yeah.
And we're gonna like not do our usual where we each just do our own thing. We kind of both love these kind of almost equally, maybe one more than the other obviously, but still love them both. So which one did you want to do first, Maita? Do you just want to go into anything?
We can start with Tangerine just because it came out a while ago.
Ooh, 2015, yeah.
Yeah, 2015. And, and I'll probably be taking the lead on this one. You'll be taking the lead on Post the conversation. So, let's do it. So, Tangerine.
I'm hype. You, like, studied this in college, so I'm, like, hype.
Yeah, I did. This was a very interesting film to everyone, not just like in content but in production, and I'll kind of go into it. But it came out in 2015. It was directed by Sean Baker and co-written by his longtime collaborator, who is Chris Burgock, I think is how you pronounce it. I don't know. Basically two
it's okay
he
white man
two
you
white
good.
Dudes and we've talked about before, you know, how whenever that happens, you know, sometimes we run into issues. I don't like to be the one to like write a whole movie off because of this shit. It's just not what I do. But we, you know, I've discussed why there are benefits to doing it otherwise. But what I have found with this movie, because I watched it and I loved it and I thought it was very well done, I was like, okay, there must be something here, like, because this white dude did it, like, what did he do right? Like, how did he do this so right? And what I found was that this wasn't the first time that he had done a film focusing on relationships between women. That's like an area of interest for him. This particular movie, Tangerine, is about friendship between two trans black women who happen to be sex workers. And we spoke to Aurora Guerrero a while back about her approach when writing or directing a story about a community that she's not necessarily a part of. And from the interviews that I've read with Sean Baker and Mia Taylor, who is the star, one of the stars of the movie, his approach was actually really similar to Aurora's, which is wild to me. He's like this random white dude that went to NYU, you know? But basically, this movie started with a location. Like, that was the first and main inspiration. Santa Monica Boulevard and Highland here in LA. And Sean lived right by that area. And he knew, like, he calls it, like, an unofficial, like, red light district. It's known for trans sex work in that area. Like, that's what it's kind of what people used to, or I don't know if they still do, but they definitely did during that time. They saw it as, like, that kind of a place. And it's in Los Angeles, of all places, but we never really see this community represented on screen. Even now, we have, like, Pose, which is really about ballroom, which is in New York, but we don't really get to see this kind of thing represented on TV, especially not in, like, such a authentic way, which is odd to say, because, once again, this is a white dude with a lot of privilege. So the way that this kind of movie came about, like I said, it started with a location. Next, Sean is kind of looking around and he finds Mia Taylor at the West Hollywood LGBTQ Center. And she's just kind of hanging out there. Like, isn't that wild? Like, just never acted before. She's like, you know, a sex worker who's been through a lot of shit. And he meets her, he talks to her, he meets her best friend, who is Kitana Kiki Rodriguez, who he ends up casting as well to be her best friend in this movie. And he decides right then, you know, he decides, this, I'm going to build the script around them. Yeah, I'm not going to build a script and then force them into them. Like, I'm molding the script around them because that's respect, you know? So they're both trans women, like, in real life as well as on screen, which is wild. And there's not a lot of information on Kitana. She plays Cinderella on the film, and Mia Taylor, who's Alexandra. But Mia Taylor, there is quite a bit of information on her. She's from Houston, Texas, actually.
Oh, shit.
She was kicked out when she lived there for coming out as gay at the time. She moved to L.A. to live with some more other family. And eventually she came to terms with her sexuality. Sorry, not her sexuality, with her gender. And was then kicked out for that. So it was just like having to come out twice, having to get kicked out twice, and having trouble getting a job. So that led to her having to turn to sex work to survive. And since Tangerine, which was, like I said, her first ever acting role, the first time that she ever did anything like that, she's gone on to play Marsha P. Johnson in a short film. She did some episodes of Dietland, which I've talked about in the past. And she's in two films that are currently in post-production. So not the last of her that we'll have seen. And I'm really excited because she's an inspirational person.
That's fucking amazing. Like, oh my god, do you remember, because I know about how the movie was shot and it was all shot off an iPhone, but what people don't realize is that he had like paid for like premium apps and like,
yeah, of course,
and he knows how to edit, of course, right? So it's not,
he'd done films before. This was this was done, the reason that this movie got so much got recognized, the reason that it got into Sundance, the reason the content was great, the script was great, the acting was great, but it was how experimental, like, the film style was. He looked into, like, how people were experimenting with shooting on iPhones, and there was, like, you know, Kickstarters of attachments for the iPhones to make the lenses wider, to make them more cinematic. And he was like, this looks great. This looks like a 35 millimeter, like, film. And so he decided to make it on three iPhone 5Ss with adapters. And, yeah, it's not like this was nothing. This had a $100,000 budget. So there was your typical sound equipment, lighting, amazing soundtrack. And,
yeah,
like, it wasn't nothing, right? Like, it makes it sound like, oh, it was filmed on iPhones, but... Like, there was a lot that goes into it. It really was. It was. That's still the hardware that was used, right? Like, he was able to make adjustments to the camera with an attachment and with a paid app. But that app, in comparison to what it costs to, like, rent or buy a professional camera, doesn't even compare. Film these days costs, like, wild money in comparison to, like, what you pay for an app. So,
I think... That's, like, super, like, 21st century. Like, that's super, like, 2000, whatever, right? Like, that's, like, fuck it. I'm going to make this shit with no money and shoot
it. I mean, it was a lot of money, $100K, but...
Still, but in comparison to how much movies cost,
yeah,
right?
I mean, this thing made almost $1 million. So it did, like, it made, like, nine times its worth.
Budget.
Right. Exactly. So
that's wild.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that went into it, but it's still quite a feat to do this on iPhones. It was, like, really interesting.
What I really liked about the movie is that it was just, like, fucking funny, and there was joy, and you got to see, like, black trans women just be, like, happy and, like, living and existing and, like, shooting the shit. So I fucking stan the movie just because of how, like, happy it made me feel to watch it, because I was like, wait, I don't really get to see this in a film, like, and we see it in real life, but we don't get to see it, like, on this fucking screen, or, you know, people talking about it at this level. Like, Maya Taylor was on, like, NPR's Fresh Air talking to Terry Gross, and, like, I don't know, to me that was really fucking dope, and it made me really happy to finally, like, see something. And I mean, a lot of it, she said that she would talk to a lot of the sex workers to get maybe more information, more stories. And, like, a lot of this was her, you know. They might have done the writing, you know, but it was stories from her, stories that she found and did. So I thought, like,
this is absolutely due to that, to the actresses, because, like, the director, Sean Baker, his intent and his, like, style is, like, slice of life. So, like, he wasn't gonna sit there and, like, do some sort of, like, PSA type of film. Like, he wasn't just gonna make you feel, like, guilty the whole time watching this thing. Like, he wanted to, like, take an actual world and give you a slice of it and show it to you. And he wanted to, another thing that he wanted to do is to make it within a day, within 24 hours. So this is all set on Christmas Eve in Los Angeles. So, yeah, I mean, and a part of it, like you said, was Mia, I believe it was Mia, telling him, like, if you're going to make this and you're going to make it about this subject that you want to capture, you have to make it funny, because otherwise you're making it for people who want to feel guilty, you know, for people who want to, like, see the struggle instead of, and you're not making this enjoyable anymore for the actual people that you're representing. So that was a lot of her telling him, like, you need to make this funny. Like, and he saw, like, from her and her relationship with her best friend, Kitana, like, humor was a coping mechanism. Humor was their life. Humor was a big part of the way that they lived their life. So he realized and didn't even try to fight her. Like, he was like, yeah, of course, I'm going to make this funny, because that's how you live your life. Like, that's the reality.
How long ago, do you remember the first thing you thought after you saw this movie?
Well, the thing about the way that I watched this movie is that I watched it in class. So there wasn't a whole lot of...
Well, how'd you feel? Yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot of time for me to just, like, reflect on it and think about how I felt about it. Immediately, there was a lecture on it. So we started going into production aspects of it, the analysis of it, the representation within it. So immediately it was a big academic conversation around it. I remember it sticking with me because of the soundtrack. I remember, like, thinking, I guess it inspired me. That was a big thing that it did, is that it inspired me because it was shot on iPhones. And at the time I was really into, like, trying to get my work on screen in whatever way possible. And I had a DSLR, I had an iPhone, like, you know, I had some of the things that they had. So I was like, maybe I can do this. And I just remember being really inspired by them using the tool of a soundtrack, like a really strong soundtrack, to make this a lot more consumable. I guess that's how I looked at it. So that's, I remember being inspired in that way.
That's good. Just so like, oh, I can make my own shit too.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty fucking inspirational. Like, that was the biggest thing about it, you know. And he's gone off to make more shit. He made Florida Project, was also nominated for an Oscar. I think Tangerine was nominated as well, wasn't it? Or am I crazy? Is that Sundance?
I'm not sure. It went to Sundance.
Okay. I know Florida Project got nominated, and that's what he did directly after.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you feel was, you said that, you know, no white boys could probably do it. There was always going to be something. What was that something that you found with Tangerine?
There wasn't, like I said, that what I was looking for is not like what was wrong with it. What I was looking for was, how did he do it right, which is what I talked about earlier, and which is building the film around the people instead of forcing the people into the film, which was really nice.
Very community-based, like,
right,
storytelling.
Exactly. Mm. But let's talk a little bit about the plot and the characters.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, it's about two best friends, Cindy and Alexandra. It opens with them at a donut shop, and it's Christmas Eve, and Cindy has just gotten out of jail. So she's celebrating with a donut and has, like, $2 to her name. Cindy, like, kind of gets some information that makes her wild out a little bit, and she goes on a search because she finds out that her, like, boyfriend or whatever was, like, stepping out on her in the 28 days that she was in jail with a fish. She says with fish.
With some chick.
Yeah, which was basically it's a cisgendered woman. And that really, like, ticks her off. And so she's just running around all of LA. That's kind of like, I watched this before I moved to LA, but then watching it today, like, post me being here for a while and seeing, like, all the different, like, places that I see every now and again around LA. Like, it even shows, like, the Hollywood stars at one point. Like, you see a lot of LA in this movie, which is really interesting.
Yeah, because they had to shoot everything, like, on the sidewalk, right?
Yeah, they shot it all, like, in public spaces. They shot it at the metro, you know, like, all kinds of stuff. It's really fun to see it now, I guess. But yeah, like, there is a lot of humor in this. But I gotta say, there's also moments in Cindy's search for the fish, which is somebody whose name starts with a D, and that's all she knows. But she's like an investigator, dude. Like, she talks to everybody. She knows exactly where to go. She walks everywhere because there's no car, right? Like, you know, budget for a car. She's just walking everywhere. And she's just, like, all day long, all she eats is, like, a donut. Like, that's it. So it's, like, the little things like that. But despite this being a funny movie, there are some really explicit moments during the movie that bring you back to reality of their situations. You know, there's, like, a hotel room filled with, like, sex workers and all these, like, really, like, scummy dudes there. And you have to see that. Alexandra has a situation where some douchebag is trying to, like, rip her off, you know, like, trying to give her, like, not the money that she's worth. And then he tries to, like, run away. And then, like, there's a scene with cops where I would say that they weren't portrayed as harshly as they could have been. Like, they were acting really casual around, like, this woman fighting this, like, white guy who's trying to rip her off. And then there's also some pretty, like, heavy portrayals of, like, drug addiction and drug use. And that's pretty tough to watch sometimes. Like, they definitely don't make you, like, there is a moment where you feel really sad. But in those moments, it's, like, a part of the plot. It's not like you're not there to, like, learn, like, oh, this you're so lucky that it isn't you, you know. It's more like this is a part of, like, what they're going through, and that's pretty much it. Then the really hard part to watch, the really sad part to watch, has to do with their friendship, and it has to do with their personal relationship. So I thought that was kind of nice that, like, the super down part, the part that really gets you in your feelings, is about friendship. And that's what the movie's supposed to be about in the, at the end of the day, which is really sweet.
Tear. Tear. Like, that's the best part of the movie, is that it's centering their friendship. And you just, like, you never get to see, like, two black women just kind of, like, be friends and, like, talk about being friends and, like, what that means and how much they mean to each other. And it's, like, really beautiful. And
it's in their actions, too. It's, like,
yeah,
it's in, like, what they do for each other and how they're really there for each other at the end of the literal night. Because Christmas Eve in LA is a bit of a weird time because people are in T-shirts. And there's not exactly, you know, it's not hot, but it's not cold by any means. So it's just like a really casual day. And a lot of people are out of town, quite honestly, because nobody's really from LA, really. So it's interesting. Bringing it back a little bit, I also want to talk about Razmik, who is an Armenian cab driver that is scattered throughout this movie. And he's a really interesting character. He's not the main character, but he's a super interesting character to have in the movie. You see him at first, like, he's literally just out there, like, hustling, right? Like, he's driving, you know, the very diverse population of LA around, ranging from, like, you know, older people and somebody who, like, had to put down her dog to somebody, to, like, these two really douchey, privileged white guys who end up puking all over the back of the cab.
Oh, God.
But what's important about that is that then he has to drive around with, like, a really bad-smelling car. And you find out that he kind of has a bit of a habit. And he goes in that area near Santa Monica and Highland looking for a sex worker. And he sees a girl, and he's, like, he's kind of surprised to find her. He's like, I haven't seen you around here before. Like, he's so familiar with the area that he's, like, surprised to find somebody he doesn't know. So he, you know, pulls out the green, and he's like, okay, getting ready to do his thing. And he realizes this is a cisgendered woman. And he gets... before I even get into that, their interactions are interesting because he's very friendly. He's very like, what's your name? Tell me about you. Like, how long have you been out here? I haven't seen you around. He's very, very, like, personal with her. And you're wondering why, and she's wondering why. And she's like, why do you want to, who gives a fuck? Don't you just want to get laid and go? But he gives a fuck, like, a lot. And you don't really get it until, like I said, he reacts really badly to finding out that he's a cisgendered woman. And he tells her, like, don't come around this block. This is not your block. And he's like, get out of here.
He's nice. He's like, this isn't the area for you?
Yeah, he's, like, giving her advice. He's like, go over there. Like, get... And so he ends up, like, he's upset, and he ends up running into Alexandra. And you see the difference of, like, you know, they're friends. Like, yes, like, he's hiring her for, like, a quickie, but they're friends.
And, there's respect there.
Right.
And he respects his sex workers.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you also, I guess it was kind of important, like, not to get into super detail about, like, exactly what he's into, but... they don't make it like, oh, he's like secretly gay type of thing. Like, they just make it like he has a certain type. I don't know how else to explain it, but it kind of surprises you, basically, what he is into and what he's looking for when he looks for these women. So
yeah, the movie doesn't kink shame at all, or, like, you know, lets people be however they are.
Right.
Pretty interesting. And then he has a whole family.
Yeah. So, well, before we get to that, he goes through, like, a car wash with her. And once they come out, like, it's Christmas Eve. So she, the sex worker, Alexandra, goes and buys him an air freshener. The air freshener is in the shape of a tangerine, which is what the movie's named after. So it's, like, such a different relationship because she's talking about her life. She's like, oh, I was hanging out with Cindy earlier. And he's like, Cindy's out of jail. Like, he knows she was in jail. Like, he knows all these things. Like, he gets so personal with them. So I just think that it's a very, he's an interesting character that they threw in there, that they don't make it like this whole thing is incredibly, like, not a personable industry, basically. They make you show you, like, some of these guys.
It's, like, not.
Yeah, it's not what you think it is. They kind of really shock you. Shock is the wrong word. They just, like, you know, they make it not stereotypical, not what, they make it real. I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah, like, there's a bunch of creepers, and then there's, like, one good one.
Well, there's, you know, it's just there's interesting relationships throughout the whole movie.
People are just human, you know, and that's what's really cool about this movie, is that it's, like, again, it's humanizing, like, the other for white folk, which is annoying that they need a movie or that they need to see this to, like, you know, empathize or see others as human. So I thought it was dope either way, but I, like, you know.
But the thing is that it doesn't focus on that. Definitely for white
folks, they can understand that.
It's not, to me, it's not doing what Roma does, where Roma, like, I feel like that one's really, really, like, aiming towards that kind of an audience. But because of his collaboration with these actresses, it's not just a PSA. To me, it's not that. It's not just, like, a thing to humanize them. It's telling their story, and they are helping to tell their story. So to me, it's very much, like, more slice of life type of film than anything. To me, it's like, this is what they have seen in their lives. This is, like, what they have lived. And to me, that's why it's, like, I don't think it is as much for white people, because it's not, like, proving to the white people what they assume, or not even just white people, but, like, because there are white sex workers, you know, like, so basically to the privilege, it's not sitting there proving to them, like, oh, these people are just, you know, going through the shit and that's all that they're doing. Like, I think it's doing the opposite. I think it's treating, you know, POC and trans women and all them, treating them like they treat white people in movies, which is just giving them all the respect in the world and letting them be very much individuals. So I don't know. That's just what I think.
No, yeah. I mean, I still think that white folk had to see this and go, oh. I mean, for me and you, we see it differently. We see the layers of it or whatever. But I'm talking about them. I'm like, I still don't think. But yeah. I mean, it is different. It's differently shot. It's both Pose and this, like, movie have that in common, is that they're not just, you know, fit into my story. They're like, here, tell your own story. So I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I love Tangerine. What would you rate it if you had to?
I would probably say no, Cafecitos. I think it's just the fully well-rounded, interesting film. Like, it impresses me on most fronts. And but before we stop talking about Tangerine, you did mention a little bit about Razmik having a whole ass family. And I don't know if you noticed, but like I said, this isn't like a PSA type of film, like you gotta, you know, learn everything and be taught a lesson type of movie. It's not, but everything is very detailed. So when you go to that Christmas, like, dinner that they have, you see, like, it's all women, he's the only man, and you see them treating him a certain way because he's, like, the head of the household. They even call him that, like, they literally call him the head of the household, the man of the house. And they also have a little bit of a conversation about being Armenian versus being American, because he wants to go work. Really, he doesn't want to go work, but, you know, that's what he says.
and
they're like,
that.
They're like, well, you're an American now, like, this is, you know, this is Christmas or whatever. So they kind of even slipped that in there a little bit, which I thought was pretty fun.
No, yeah, I think it was cool to see, like, his family dynamic, and it felt authentic, and it felt real, felt good. Like, being an immigrant in LA and working and hustling, even on Christmas Day, it felt like, okay, this is cool. I like to see this. Like, he's not just some background character. He's not just some, you know, labor. He just doesn't just, like, drive people around. Like, you kind of get insight to people. They're not just, like, what they usually are in other people's movies. They're not these, like, little props that you put up in the back so that you can move the plot forward. Like, he wasn't that, his family wasn't that, like, none of the characters in here, like you said, everyone's given respect and ridden with, like, dignity, which is something we just, that's the least we always ask for. So I kudos to this movie. I fucking love it. I love that they gave him a family of all women, and he just looks annoyed, and he just looks like he just wants to chill. He's just like, look, I just need to relax. Yeah. Y'all got me tired. I just want to be left alone.
I just want to go find Cindy.
Yep.
Yeah. There was a couple of characters that were super kind of like side characters. There was a white woman who that, you know, the one that she was pissed off at, who was a sex worker as well. And she was interesting. I wouldn't say she was given a lot of substance, but like on purpose. And then Chester, who is like a pimp.
Oh, Chester. fucking Chester.
The only thing that I like about him, he's a problematic. He's a pimp. I mean, obviously, he's like a horrible fucking dude at the end of the day. But yeah. The one thing is that he was really real when it came to Cindy. Like, he had her name tattooed on his chest. Like, he shut down anybody that tried to call him gay because he liked her. Like, that's a woman. And he was like, fuck you. Like, I'm not gay. Like, you know, so that's the one thing that I thought was really interesting, that even though this person is really shitty, he's, you know, he's still like not transphobic, which is wild, you know?
Yeah, he contains multitudes. Oh, I love it.
So yeah, this movie, fucking fantastic.
The ending, like the buildup to the dodo shop.
Yeah.
That shit was wild. It was really good though. There's a
huge altercation. And then, but then it still kind of carries on and has like the resolve, and the ending is about friendship. And I'm not going to like spoil what happens there.
No.
But it's just, it's beautiful.
It's really, really fucking beautiful. I love it. It's a good movie. Yeah. Five Pandulces. It's really good.
So good. Like,
it's on Netflix, y'all, I think.
No, it's on Hulu.
No, it's on Hulu. Y'all go watch it on Hulu. It's fuck. So moving on to the second thing, the most recent thing. Okay. So if y'all haven't seen Pose, I need y'all to go pause this, go watch Pose, and come back. At least watch a couple episodes. I don't want to ruin it for you. It's fucking amazing. We're obsessed. We love it. We're dedicated to it. Since this came out, since before it came out, we already stand. So I just take a moment, pause this, come back. Anyways, we're gonna both talk about Pose. It came out in 2018, and Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk co-created it, but the real person who created it is Steven Canals. He's an Afro-Latino man from New York City. He based this off of house culture in the 80s, and I thought it was really fucking dope. Maybe if you haven't ever seen Pose, as an intro, I would say go watch Paris is Burning on Netflix right now. Go watch The Kiki. I think that's on Hulu.
I think it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix, okay. They're both amazing little documentaries that give you a little bit of insight into what was going on in New York in the 80s in ballroom culture. And I think it's really, really interesting and very good intro to Pose. Because Pose kind of explains, but Paris is Burning really explains what it is. So Pose stars MJ Rodriguez. She's Blanca. She's a mother of a house evangelista. Yes, my house. Billy Porter plays Pray Tell, an amazing, like, he's the MC of all the ballroom events that they have. Indy Moore plays Angel, and she's they are an actual angel in real life. I know, because I've never met her, obviously. Ryan Jamal, yes. Never met her, but obviously met them. Yeah. Excuse me.
She recently came out as non-binary. It's like a pretty recent, because we've talked about them like before, and we're like, I love her. She's the love of my life. She's a woman, because they identified as a woman.
They are still the love of my life.
Then I guess recently came out as non-binary. So
they continue to be the love of our lives.
Yeah. Still so beautiful, so gorgeous.
We love you, Andrew Moore. You're beautiful. Ryan Jamal Swain is Damon. He is like the intro character to this. And Angel Curiel, he plays Papi, and his role gets significantly larger in season 2. But anyways, let's start with season 1 and how much I fucking love this show so much. Season 1 of Pose is kind of tackling a little bit different things than season 2 of Pose. Season 1 is definitely tackling like the AIDS crisis, like before they knew what AIDS was. It was just the virus at that point. And like, to give some context into American history back then, is like Ronald Reagan was president and he didn't give a fuck if like queer people were killing themselves, like he was not killing themselves but dying from a disease. He had plenty of chances to actually like stop it and send money to the CDC so they could, he could fund it correctly so they could do research. It wasn't until like a little boy died through a blood transfusion in the 90s, I believe, or the late 80s, that they started to fund this, like the CDC, to do actual research. So at this point in history, there's just like queer people, specifically like queer, what, men, queer masculine folk,
queer
trans people are dying because of the virus, on top of everything else, right? But they're actually just falling, just like dying left and right in the 80s because of this. And a cool thing that I really like about Poe's versus Tales of the City is that there's not a white man telling you that we couldn't possibly understand what was happening in the 80s to white men, because it was, the AIDS virus was actively affecting like all queer men, all queer folk in the 80s, and I don't feel like this show like shoves it down your throat and no white man is the one doing it. Like, that's what I fucking love about Pose, and that's why I fucking didn't like Tales of the City, because there's not a white man telling me that I couldn't possibly understand it. There's a black man telling me that, hey, this is what's happening, this is how we survived.
And like trans women.
And trans women, more importantly, like they're telling us how they survived in the 80s, and to me that's just so much more worthwhile to explore and more interesting to explore than really rich cis white gay men in San Francisco. Like, fuck you, I don't care, bro. Like,
because they're only seeing one side of it. Like, they're, you know, being like attacked and like, you know, there's a lot of like terrible things happening to them because they're gay, but there's nothing's happening to them because they're gay and brown or black and a woman and a trans person. Like, they only have one level, that I think they only have one lens to see this through.
Yeah, and how dare a white man try to preach to like black folk about that? Like, that's, especially black queer folk, like, that's so fucking like, I don't even have the word right now, I'm just trash. Pissed.
That's what
it's trash. And versus Pose, where you even get to see where cis queer white men are fucking actively fucking throwing out MJ's character. There's a whole episode on how MJ is trying to fight the cis white gay bars in New York because she's a trans woman. They wouldn't even let her go into those bars. And it's like, that's super important to know, because I feel like I'm getting my whole history, my queer history of the 80s on down from Pose. Which, I know it's not completely the same, but honey, we had our shit whitewashed. All we know is like the white people's movements. I don't want that shit anymore. I want trans women to tell me what the fuck they did to like help us survive so that we could be here right now. So shout out to all my queer like trans women out here fucking making that shit work. Or just my trans women, period. Y'all just out here fucking surviving, which is something I can't even fucking relate to. And how dare they try to fucking do that in Tales of the City? It makes me so fucking mad. Anyways, this show centers... I'm really mad about that. Anyways, this show centers Damon as he gets kicked out from his home. And he fucking takes a bus to New York and is homeless for a while. And that's how they kind of tell the story of how houses are made in New York City. Is that it's usually kids that have to... Another thing that Pose really centers is that found family concept. So what Damon is doing is he's going to his found family. He's going to a family that he's going to have and that he's made through ballroom. And that's what ballroom centers, is families, is houses. That's why they're named houses, on top of also like being named after famous fashion houses as well, like Versace, fucking Evangelista, named after supermodels and stuff. And the whole point of a ballroom is just to see who can pass the best, you know.
Well, like, some of the competitions, yeah.
some of it, correct. Some of it's just like amazing camp,
some's fashion, amazing. Some mm-hmm. is dancing, things like that.
Yeah, and a lot of it's centered about, like, how well someone can pass walking down the street, or how well, or how real you look. You know, the whole thing is about realness, and how real of a woman do you look? How real of, like, a straight man can you look? Or how much, like, a businessman can you look like? Because so many doors were closed out to people of color, to black people in the fucking 80s, especially in New York, the most racist places ever. I don't care what anyone says. Especially back then, fuck that. I don't want that smoke. But, and I think that's really interesting and cool, because they have amazing writers, amazing people working alongside them for Pose. It's really a lot of the background people that we owe a lot of credit to. Or Lady J is writing in the background. Janet Mock is writing, fucking producing, directing. She's amazing in the background of this. And I think what makes Pose amazing is all the people of color that are behind it. All the black women, all the fucking Latinx folks, Afro-Latinx folks in the background making this shit fucking go. And what I love about Pose is that there are Afro-Latinas at the fucking center of the show. This is everything that we wanted. Like, it's actually diverse. If we see some white folk, they're usually, like, problematic. They're usually, like... I mean, do you see a lot of white folk in the show?
Well, that's actually one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because in season one, you have Evan Peters definitely baiting in all the white girls to come and watch the season one, and he is this, you know, he plays a very interesting and complicated character, and they don't bring him back, and I think that that's a wise choice. I think putting him in there and putting other, like, sugar daddy white man, right, rich man types in that first season was definitely, like, a move that they thought was going to be necessary, but they captured an audience and they didn't feel they needed this anymore. So season two, white people are not really there very much, and when they are, they're, like, barely a character. They're always, like, some ridiculous privileged white person. And
I mean, the only, like, white person that's not, like, problematic is Sandra Bernhardt, because she's actually queer, so...
Right. Oh, yeah. They did bring her in this season. I completely forgot about her. She's pretty cool. She's
a boss-ass bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they actually bring in, like, a trans white woman as well that comes into one of the houses and stirs up a little bit of a controversy. But for the most part, they took out, like, these cis white dudes that were kind of, like, running shit in the first season. And now it's like, they're like, we don't need them. And I think that was a really, really good choice for season two.
I love that, because in the season one, I guess, like, it went with Angel's storyline. Like, it went with what Angel was going for and how Angel saw herself. And it really tapped into, like, I don't know, what it felt like to be a woman, you know, for that character specifically. And I think that gives a lot of people insight to just, you know, that emotional, like, fucking range, that, like, story arc. At the end, Angel is completely different from who she was in episode one, and I call that writing, story arc.
It's called character development.
Growth. It's a thing. You can do that in shows. So shout out to fucking Pose for giving us fucking story. Oh my god. Do you have, like, a favorite character? Do you have a favorite storyline?
I mean, I love Angel, and not just because I have a huge crush on them. Definitely. And let me think on that. That's a good question, because I feel like I just kind of respect a lot of people in the story. You know who's a newcomer this season, who's also on Good Trouble?
We love her.
Gosh, what is her name? I think her name is, in real life, is, like, Haley. Yeah, Haley Sahar. On Pose, her name is Lulu. On Good Trouble, her name is Jasmine Martinez. And I have the biggest crush on her, too. So, honestly, I'm just...
That last just episode crushing. Of Good Trouble. Yeah. Tears. Tears in that last episode. She was amazing. Anyways.
Yeah, so I'm super stoked on her quite a bit.
I have a soft spot for MJ, just because, like, I've never, like... She's just such an amazing mother and a sister. And in season two, you really get to see how she's, like, stepping into her role as, like, mother of, you know, House Evangelista. But at the same time, you see her more as, like, sister. Like, because she's helping out her sisters a lot in season two. Like, any issue, they come running to MJ because they know she's literally the only sane one that can handle it. And I love that she's just like an unapologetic like badass. Like, she got kicked out of that fucking gay bar and was like, fuck y'all. And she decided to open up her own nail salon because she got fired from her nail salon.
She quit.
Well, she quit, but she was about to get fired.
She was given an ultimatum and she made a choice.
And she walked out because she's a bad bitch. She a bad bitch. Anyways, we love MJ. Like, I love her storyline. And I just love, pray tell, for being Billy Porter. Because, like, Billy Porter is a fucking theater legend. Tony Award winning.
Icon.
Like, fucking
Emmy
icon.
Emmy nominations come out tomorrow, which is 2 days ago for all of you. So we can't comment on them right now.
Yeah.
But I'm stoked on it. And I know there's going to be Pose nominations. I know there's going to be Killing Eve nominations. I fucking better see, like, fucking Fleabag. I better see.
Oh, Fleabag's on there.
One day at a time, you know. And I feel like I'm gonna be wild disappointed, but
if Pray Tell or MJ don't get a motherfucking nomination, I don't know what to do. Oh, also, I really, really, really fucking love. Oh God, I know her name. Fuck.
Who is she on? Angela Carras.
I love Candy, but the mother from The Old House.
Oh, the one that passes Elektra.
No. Elektra. I fucking love Elektra. That bitch is making money season 2. She is like living her fullest best life, and I love how much of like a villain she is, but also totally not a villain. Like,
yeah.
Like, she's just like petty about stupid shit, but when it comes to like real life issues, she's a completely different person. Like, she does understand sisterhood. She does understand like community, and she does see the world for what it is. I'm not going to ruin season 2 and what happens, but like something really serious happens and she is completely spooked. And I'm really surprised at like this character's ability to go back and forth from being like a hard ass bitch to being like a really soft, kind, regular human, you know? And I love that about Elektra, that she's so fucking layered. Love her too. I love everyone in this show. Like, I mean, you know,
her
everyone except...
On her season 1 was wild then.
That's what I'm saying. Like, with her moving in with MJ, with her daughter, and her acknowledging that, you know, she wasn't a good mother. Like, the episode, one of the hardest, best episodes to me from season 1 is going to be MJ's, something happens with her mother. And I just, I cry that entire episode because it's just, there's so many...
It's like an Afro-Latino family too, like that's being kind of highlighted.
Yes, like the fucking food, the like the Spanglish,
the interactions between siblings, you know, like that felt really real to me.
What her name was before and like how they were just using it, it felt so violent in that moment. And
yeah, using dead names is fucking violent.
It's violent, dude. And I just, that whole episode, I fucking cried. Like, it was something about seeing like a Latina mom like admit she was wrong at the end. I don't know, dude. It was a lot there. And even season 2 is doing that too by, I'm not gonna talk about what they did if you haven't seen it, but it was kind of controversial. A lot of people didn't really like that decision.
I haven't
they
seen
made.
It, so yeah, please don't.
I'm not ruining it for you. It's just some people didn't agree with it. All I do know is that she got a job lined up, honey, and so does Pray Tell.
I'm Billy straight Porter's up looking forward to the... And I feel like every single time I say this, I jinx myself and I fucking hate the season, but I'm looking forward to the next American Horror Story now. Just saying.
Look, Angelica Cross and Billy Porter are both in it, and I heard Homegirl decided she didn't want to be in them anymore. What's her name?
Emma Roberts?
Sarah Paulson isn't going to be in it.
Really?
Yeah, I heard she's not.
God damn it. I was kind of hoping for like a Sarah Paulson, Angelica Ross like relationship a little bit, just so like they would. But no.
That would be cool, but interesting. I don't think so. I think she's finally like, nah. Plus, you know, that Billy Porter budget.
Fucking
you know,
Emma Roberts is coming down too.
She is?
Emma Roberts, yeah, she's coming down.
I might just watch it. Like, I do every season. I watch the first, like, 5 episodes and then stop because it all falls apart at the end. So.
Well, you do better than me. I watched like the pilot of Cult and stopped. I was like, nope. Done.
Oh, well, no, I mean, I haven't been watching them lately, so I'm fake. But yeah, I really fucking love Pose. It talks about AIDS, it talks about coming out, it talks about passing in this heteronormative fucking society, especially the 80s. And season 2, it takes place in 1990. And it also, like, discusses how dangerous and how real sex work is for trans women. And it doesn't fucking sugarcoat it. And it's getting very political in season two. And I really like that, actually. Do you remember, like, first episode, it opened up on, like, the... Like, it's giving me, like, queer history that I'd never get to learn in anything that I've ever done. Like, the island where they were burying the bodies. I didn't know about that. Like, I'm learning.
Oh, right. Where they were... And they would put people that had AIDS separately, like, quarantine them, basically. And they had the stones.
Shit's super fucking tough. I mean, I'm getting my education on, and it's better this way because I'm getting it from, like, you know, queer men of color, queer Afro-Latinos men. So, fuck yeah. Representation matters, and I cry every time this fucking show comes on just because it just does so much, and it's amazing. And come on, Janet Mock's out here? Like, come on.
No,
like,
cafecitos?
No cafecitos. Zero,
because Janet Mock is a genius.
She really fucking is. What a fucking brave ass genius too. Like, wow. Anyways, 5 panduces for Poe, season 1 and season 2. Season 2 is coming to a close. So if you guys, I didn't spoil it. I tried not to. Just season 1
get
a little
FX.
Bit.
It's get that FX.
Get that FX. It's worth giving your coins to. Season 3 is already coming. It got renewed. Thanks to everybody who's watching it. Hey, gang. Poe's gang. Tell us about your favorite moments in Pose. What made you cry? What made you happy? Like, are y'all loving it? I mean, I'm obsessed. I love it. It makes me so happy. Does it make you happy, Maita?
Sometimes.
I mean, you know what I mean.
I love the theatrics most of the time. I like the drama. I like that Elektra doesn't know how to not flip over a table. I love all these characters. I love that they're growing. Like you said, character development is a reason that TV comes before film for me, because you get to see these people grow with, and like, to me, growing up, it was kind of tough. So seeing them was like seeing family. It was like they grew, I grew, you know, like, so I love that shit. And I'm stoked on this show, and I'm glad that it's getting so much attention. And I can't wait for all the nominations tomorrow or 2 days ago for you guys. So we should definitely do Insta Live. So go follow us on CYC on Instagram, CYC Podcast on Instagram, and we'll probably go live together on there. At some point, we'll announce it ahead of time. And yeah, follow us. NYTE Panda is my personal as well.
Mine's at Fried Papita on Twitter. And guys, go watch Pose, go watch Sandrine, go support queer content, go support queer creators. Like, we out here, okay? We exist. Just gotta talk about us, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe like go rate and review on iTunes so that we can get on a chart and that other people can find us on those charts, you know?
Yeah, five stars only. Thank you.
Por favor. Thank you. That'd be really highly appreciated. But yeah, and shout out to all our Patreons. They heard us last week. Was it last week?
Yeah, last week.
No, it was two weeks ago.
Oh,
yeah. Patreon.com/CYC podcast for any of you that want to show your support. Your money goes into this podcast, such as getting Fred Pepita to Los Angeles next month, hopefully.
Thank you.
So, yeah. All right, guys. Don't forget to rate and review again.
Rate, review, 5 stars.
Recommend to your friend, recommend to your mom, steal your mom's phone and rate us on there. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.